Welcome to Activate Yourself with Gita Sidhu Rab, where we feature otherwise normal people who, because of events in their life, have turned left and done unusual, inspiring, incredible things, like build a business, become a happiness expert, marry a prince, create an empire, or like your host, set up a health and wellness business, Nosh Detox. Here's your host, Gita Sidhu Rab.
Hi, good morning, everybody. This is Gita Sidhu Rab. And today on Activate Yourself, which is the show where we put people who go through life, do their thing, do what they're meant to do, do what they're brought up to do, which is actually frigging a hell of a lot worse. And then something happens, several somethings happen, and they find themselves kind of suddenly turning left and thinking, no. But these terrible experiences, you know, like when something really bad's happening to you and someone goes, oh my God, one day you'll see the benefit of this and you want to slap them. Sadly, you will one day see the benefit of that. And sadly, these terrible things actually do help you to find who you are. And I actually constantly have a prayer these days where I'm like, can I just learn that without the pain? Because I am so down to learn that without the pain. So today's guest is somebody who's going to be open and vulnerable and really have conversations about, and there's a very interesting line between vulnerability and victimhood, I think, because, you know, when you, it takes an awful lot of strength to be calmly and comfortably vulnerable in a place where you're not being a victim. And it's like, oh, woe is me. Oh my God, my life really sucks. And today's guest, you know, is one of those people that has had real life happen to her. She's had abusive relationships happen to her. She's had really bad surgeries happen. She's had a nervous breakdown. And I think that a lot of that is kind of like the spectrum of journey for so many women, that it's almost a norm. And I know that it sounds really controversial to say this, but I have never yet on any male feed seen be resilient, you can bounce back. Whereas on women's feeds, it's all we bloody hear. So welcome, Lisa. Thank you very much for joining me.
Hello. Thank you for inviting me.
With a story like that, because what was interesting is that I said to you what happened to you and you were like kind of everything. So what I find interesting about your story is that I'm a coach as well, and I work with a lot of women, but they really struggle to see that they have low self-esteem when they're very successful. And it's like, but I couldn't be this successful and have low self-esteem. And it's like, well, actually, I pretty much feel like your low self-esteem led you to being that successful, yes. Right? And so there's a place where you found that you had low self-esteem.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, massively. Massively, many, many times as well. I think initially it was that, and funnily enough, I'm going to write about it today, which is very bizarre, was the point when I actually went, enough's enough, and I actually went to the doctors and I had the diagnosis of stress, anxiety and depression, and I'm like, oh, thanks for that. And they, here's a prescription, go and do stuff you enjoy. And I was like, well, what?
Because you didn't know.
Because I didn't know. And it was like, okay, I'll... So I literally went into my local town and I just happened to see posters for a relaxation class and a Tai Chi class. And they were both starting that week. And I'm like, well, I'll do that, see if I enjoy either of those. And I did the Tai Chi for 18 months. So there was obviously something in that that I had to go through one thing to find the other thing. But it's that so many things have impacted on me that my confidence and self-esteem were literally through the floor. And I just thought it was normal. I thought it was just life. I just thought, oh, this is what I'm destined to be, do, say, think, feel, believe, whatever.
Why did you think that? Because I struggle with the fact that I think women do think that. I think women don't understand they think that. Yeah. But why did, do you know what I mean? Because it's our upbringing. But when I say to women, but our upbringings teach us this, then I get yelled at because I'm like, you're not a feminist. And I'm like, really?
Yeah. It's, I had an extremely good upbringing. I was bullied at school. I went into the corporate world at various points. I was in hospitality, I was in travel, I was in business, I was in facilities management, I was in all different things. And it was all that process and that system, and that it was never about the people. It was always about the money, the bottom line, the other stuff. And I think I just became a robot. I just became a, oh, I've got to do this because so-and-so says I've got to, or this is my job and this is, you know. I never stopped to think, well, actually, am I enjoying it? Do I want to do it? Is it right for me? I never stopped to think about
that. So let me stop you a moment, because this is a bugbear of mine. Why do you think women understand that they don't know what they want because they're not trained to want?
Yes.
You think they understand that?
Yeah.
Did you know that?
No, I didn't. At the time, I'm like, it wasn't until somebody said to me, what do I enjoy doing, that I stopped and thought, actually, none of this is bringing me peace or joy or anything. It was
so painful. Why were you doing it? Because you thought you had to?
Yeah. All the time until I had my breakdown. And after that, to be honest, because I went back to work, and it wasn't until I had my hysterectomy and then I was made redundant that I started to see the patterns. And it wasn't until very recently that I actually noticed how much I was repeating those patterns. And I didn't think of it at the time until people have pointed it out to me, and I'm like, but I'm not repeating patterns. It's a different situation, it's a different job, it's a different bleh. But actually, it's exactly the same pattern.
100%. I feel like I married the same man more than once. They just were kind of shorter, bigger, taller, thinner. It just makes me laugh that I'm like, I'm never doing that again.
Exactly. Done it myself, said it myself. Jobs, relationships, everything.
So let's talk about this, because this is something I really, really care about. It's something I speak about a lot, and I'm just really fascinated. Do we just go through life with really low self-esteem as a personal choice? Because now, as adults, we're choosing this.
Yeah.
No one's now anymore making us, because they've already put us into the mold and we're not breaking out the mold.
Yeah.
Why? How? What?
I know.
I have my view. I just want to hear yours.
I think we're so conditioned by society that it becomes the norm. And I see, with all the things that I do, I see and I sense. And I know that people are following patterns. I'm sitting opposite friends and I'm going, you need to break this pattern, you need to do this. And I'll say something and they're completely on the defensive.
Right.
And I'm sitting there going, I can't help you because you don't see this, you don't recognise it, and you don't want to come out of that mindset.
Why?
You don't want to change.
Why?
I don't know. It's that most women I speak to, and some men I have to say, are in that, no, I've got to do this, I've got to do this, I've got to do this. And I'm like, stop. Just stop. You haven't got to do anything. But we get into that we go against the flow, don't we? When we're like, no, society dictates that I have to do X, Y, and Z, and I have to do X, Y, and Z. And you don't recognize it until you really start. For me, it wasn't working through it. It was standing back.
Yeah. And then the thing that interests me about it is that we choose to perpetuate the treating of ourselves as second-class citizens in our own lives.
Yeah. Because it's all a choice, isn't it?
Do you think this is, okay, we're going to go on a break, and then I want you to answer the question for me. Do you think that the understanding of this is age-related? Do you think it's harder to understand this when you're younger than when you're older? Ooh. Okay. So we're going to go for a break.
Okay.
And then we'll be back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
So we're back. Do you think? I remember this quote that has really stuck in my mind. And it said, when you're young, as young women have privilege and no responsibility, and older women have responsibility and no privilege.
No privilege.
That's so do ridiculous. You think, because I'm speaking to a group of young women next Friday, and I want to talk to them about this. And I'm like, my daughters are like, Mama, that's just not true or whatever. And I wonder if it's an age thing.
It's a good point, actually, because I've not thought about it before. But when I think about some of the young people that I work with, I'm talking like sort of 18, 17, 18 year olds. And I think of some of the older people that I work with, or friends or whatever, who can be my age, maybe a little bit younger, maybe older. And their views of life, I think, are very different. And when you go back to upbringing, and you do look at ages, when you think now that when I was born, we didn't have mobile phones. We didn't have mobile phones, but I don't know where they came in the 90s, was it?
Yeah.
So I was 20, something like that, because I was born in 73. And I fight constantly to go back to the time before mobile phones and social media.
Why?
Because I think social media, for me personally, so I've just literally deleted my Facebook account. It cancelled either yesterday or tomorrow, I can't remember. And I absolutely hated it. And I'm sitting there going, you've been on it since 2014. Why have you carried on being on it when you don't like it? So I came off it. And the amount of messages I got saying, oh, my God, what are you doing? Why are you dropping? Your world's going to come to an end.
How did they know?
Well, exactly. Exactly. What, you've got to be on Facebook for business. You've got to be on Facebook for doing this.
That's rubbish.
No, it's never bought me anything apart from probably stress and anxiety. And I felt physically sick scrolling through it the other day. And I went, enough's enough.
Why did you feel sick? What was it about it that gave such a visceral reaction?
There was just, this happens every day, doesn't it? There was just a post. There's a couple of posts. There was one that was somebody's dinner. And there was one that was an advert for high ticket coaching. I can turn your business into a high ticket coaching overnight and earn you a six figure salary. And I was like, oh, my God. And I just sat there and I went, I just think I want to be sick. And I'd already decided to delete it. And I kept going back in and put a
What's
post
it about
up
the
and
dinner?
Responded to messages. And I was like, I just thought, really, have we not got anything better to do than this?
What about the dinner made you want to go on fasting?
Just why? Why?
Why have you posted your dinner?
Yeah, exactly. Like, it really looks lovely. It wasn't the dinner. It was just the fact that it was there. And I was like, oh, God. And I know, I get it. I get what's behind it. It's the people buy from people. It's going, look, I'm sharing this with you. I didn't read it, so it could have been them sharing a recipe for all I know. I just didn't get past the picture of the dinner. And I know a lot of people, you know, I look on Google for recipes and things. And I'm just like, no, surely not. I'm going out. And I've taken a photograph of one dinner once when I was abroad, because it really did look spectacular and it did taste spectacular. We didn't post it anywhere. And I'm just like, no. Why do we take the time out to take the photograph, to post it on social media? And then on the reverse, why do people actually take their time out and comment on those things? And I'm like, what does it achieve?
You don't think it's the connection it's achieving?
No.
What
I don't
do
see it.
It was?
I don't
okay,
see
let's
it.
Let's take another step here. What do you think a life well lived should look like?
I think that's very, very individual. And this is very strange, because I was thinking about this the other day, and we were talking to somebody about homelessness, and I very nearly was, and I see so many around now. But there's also a lot of them that have got top of the range BMWs parked around the corner, and then they're begging and they're not paying taxes. So there's so many different things, because you're going, well, I would love to help you, but you've probably earned more money than me, but I don't know.
It's hard.
It's very hard. And it's that, and I remember speaking to somebody and their friend or somebody they knew had at one point been homeless. And their opinion of it was, in the summer, because it did happen to them in summer, they were absolutely loving it because they were out in the open. Staring at the stars. They were in touch with nature.
That's awful.
Now, this was that person, the person who was homeless. This was their opinion. They were in touch with the stars. They were like, you know, because it was so warm, obviously, you know, in the winter, it's a very different story. And they were kind of at one with nature, and their mindset of it and the way they viewed it was, actually, this is kind of a reset. This is a good thing in some ways, obviously not in others. But then you've got the, and they were happy to a point. Then you've got the billionaires who are like, well, I haven't got enough.
They don't beg, though.
Don't they? Do they just do it in a different way by posting these adverts? I don't know. It's one of those, isn't it? It's that, you know, my ideal lifestyle would look completely different to yours. And my ideal lifestyle probably changes every day because I'm like, well, at the moment I'm living with my parents because of COVID. I came back, I was working abroad. So my house was rented out. And it's like, is this ideal? Well, no, I'm 49. I'm living with my parents. No, it's not ideal. But at the end of the day, it's a hell of a lot better than somebody who is homeless that's got nothing. But then it's their views on their situation and the choice that then we go back again to choice, don't we? And the choices that they make. And I was talking to a homeless guy. Well, he's passed away now. He passed away while I was working away. And I was chatting to him in the middle of Birmingham. And he was just like, you're the only person that's treating me like a human being since I've been on the streets, because I was talking to him. And I said, well, why are you here and what happened? And, you know, just a normal everyday conversation. And that, he wasn't there when I got back. And then he contacted me a couple of weeks later. And he said, well, I've been to see those people I said I was going to see, and I've done this and I've done that. And I'm like, wow, that's amazing. And he did start to turn his life around, and he did eventually get in a hostel. But he said he went back on the streets because the hostel wasn't safe. He felt safer on the streets. I'm like, that's just wrong.
Yeah, no, it's very true. What do you, and it's true, I think that the kind of the moral behind that story is that actually seeing people is really important. And one of the things that ties that together is that social media is a way of being visual, but not actually being seen. It's sleight of hand, isn't it? You can see what it is that you want to see and make it really different. And nobody can gainsay that because you're there and you're showing what you want to be seen.
Yeah.
So what is it that you teach people, and how is it you teach them to find their self-esteem, for example?
By being themselves. Now, it comes in different ways, because I do a lot around writing, not necessarily journaling, because I'm working with a lot of people who want to tell their story. They want to tell it for two reasons, which is the same as me. They want to tell it to get it out, which is part of their healing process, which it was for me, but they also want it to help other people. And it's entirely their own, you know, it's their own journey. I'm just kind of holding their hand and going, well, you can do it. You do it in your way. I wrote mine as a novel. I now help people intuitively. So psychically, spiritually, intuitively with writing, however it is that serves them best. Coaching as well, that comes into it. A call, every single call is different because every person's needs are different and everybody's at a different stage. And people go, oh, can you fix me? Well, no. Can you help me do this? I can give you some guidance, but the outcome has to be up to you because it's your life, not mine. And I fell down on this a lot myself because I was listening to other people. And people would send me messages going like, you know, oh, so-and-so, the love of your life's not far away. And, you know, your ideal career's not far away and this and that. And I'm like, oh God. And I'm like, oh yeah, so I've got to do this. And several people have said different things to me, like, you know, have you thought about doing this? And have you thought about doing that? And normally if I hear, when I hear that, I'd go, oh yeah, 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 oh, let me do it. I'd go home and I'd start doing it. And I'm going, hang on. That's just what one person's feeling. There's a little bit of a seed there. You don't need to do anything with it particularly.
So hang on. That's so interesting, because what you're saying is that the muscle of making your own choice for your own good,
yeah,
is the thing that's developing.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to go for a short break and we're going to come back, because my issue with this is this. I think women have never been told that they even have that muscle.
Interesting.
So we'll talk about that when we come back. We're just going to go on a short break.
Okay.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, so we're back. I think that one of the reasons you struggled to find that concept of your choice is because as women, we're not told we have choices.
Yeah.
And so therefore, and all activity is a muscle, emotional activity, mental activity, physical activity. It's a muscle. The more you use, the more you have. Yeah. So one of the reasons you had to train yourself to stop and think is because your instinctive desire was pleasing. So if someone said something, you went, yes. So what is the opposite of that?
Yeah. Very, very true. I never considered myself a people pleaser. And then I actually stopped. I've done this again several times. And I'm like, I don't like Indian food because it upsets me. It upsets my stomach. Personal choice, I don't go to Indian restaurants.
Well, you're screwed because it's our biggest, what is it, our national dish is some kind of friggin' curry, isn't it?
Exactly. It's like, yeah, I like it, really. And I know a lot of my friends, in fact, I think all of my friends like Indian, and most of them would probably say that's my favourite meal. And I'm like, oh, okay. And they would go into it and I'm thinking, I'm not enjoying this because, like, I would be having, like, just a plate of chips. Or I know this is going back quite a while, and I know a lot of Indian takeaways or restaurants or whatever do English food, the same as Chinese, that, you know, you can get anything anywhere, can't you, really, in some ways. But at that point, I just went, I don't want to do this. I'm not enjoying this. So I did stop it. And it took a lot to say, no, I don't want to come out. I don't want to go. And then it was
like,
you didn't say,
I'm not going if you go to a Chinese Indian restaurant. You said, I'm not going.
Yeah. Why that's where they were going. And it was just like, we're going to this. Do you want to come? And I said, no. And then it was like, well, they stopped asking me. And I thought, oh, so they're not my friends anymore. I'm going back a few years now. I don't think like this anymore. they're not my friends. They don't like me. They don't want to be with me. They don't love me. They don't. Oh, my God, what am I doing? I must go to this. That kind of cycle. And I look at it completely differently now. But at the time, it was just, I've got to do that to be in with those people. Well, I didn't have to, and I'm still friends with them.
What did you do to make it different?
You know, I was probably slowly starting to realise that actually by saying no to certain things that didn't bring me joy, that didn't make me happy, that I didn't like, actually gave room for things that I did. And I am going back probably more than a decade before I had my breakdown, possibly. But even then, that seed was planted. I just didn't know what it was, because it was that, oh, God. And even my mum would say, well, why are you going if you don't like it? Why are you doing that? And I've just recently stopping doing some voluntary work. And I said to my mum and dad, I'm like, I need to tell him I'm doing this. And she's like, it's your choice, you know. The word voluntary, look it up in the dictionary kind of thing. But it's the same with everything, isn't it? You don't have to do anything if you don't enjoy it.
So what is it that Do you feel you're now in a place where you don't have to think about it now? You'll just make choices for you? Or do you feel that it's the stopping and then taking time to think about it? That what's that journey of development? Trajectory?
I think it's a bit of both sometimes. I mean, by actually stopping recently and doing virtually nothing, my creativity just took off, just started to flow to the point where I started writing a children's book. And within 2 days, I've got 4,500 words. And I'm just like, oh, okay, this is a bit different. But I think that it's a bit of both. It's that, does that suggestion by somebody feel icky? Or does it feel good? Is it kind of worth pursuing? And sometimes it's an instant, oh, my God, I'm so excited. That happened in my writing group last week. It was like, oh my God, I'm so excited. These people have got so many, such powerful stories to tell, men and women alike. And I'm like, oh, I can really see this, like, you know, this moving forward for people. And then somebody suggested something else. And I was just like, it was kind of that, no, I do need to stop and think about that one and let that one sort of develop in the background. Percolate, that's it. If it's going to go somewhere, the doors will open up. If it isn't, then they won't. But it was almost that I'd got to act on everything that I heard, and now I just think, oh, no, maybe not.
So what do you, so when people come to you, how do you, what's the first thing that you have as a conversation? What do you say? What do you start with?
It will depend. If it's a reading, it just goes into a reading. I don't do so many of those.
Oh, you're an intuitive, as in you actually do readings. Yeah. I swear I didn't understand that. Yeah. We're at the end of this conversation and I didn't understand
I do both, because I kind of backed off from that because the intuitive stuff comes into everything. And I didn't want to say I'm a medium and I do readings. And that's all I do, because I work in a different way to what people expect from a medium. They go, oh, I'm automatically going to be connected to my great grandmother's auntie. And if you don't bring her through, you're not real.
Yes.
And it doesn't work like that. Yeah. You know,
no, it really doesn't.
It's like, I can only give you what's coming through. And sometimes it's not spirit. Sometimes it's psychically. Sometimes it's like pick up on their energies. And I had a client a couple of years ago, and she was in such a bad state, I couldn't do a reading. That session then was to calm her down and to do a meditation with her almost, and to do deep breathing exercises. Her energy was so wild. And I just said, a reading's not going to do you any good. It's starting from this point. So until I actually get on the call or get face to face with somebody or whatever, I can't say I'm going to do this, that, and the other. It's all intuitive. It's all whatever comes. But I always ask that it's what they need, which obviously with any reading it should be, but also that it will give them something that they can take away and they can take action from. And I'm not telling them what to do. I will tell them what I can see, feel, sense, whatever it is. It's up to them then to go away and maybe think about it, or maybe if something really resonated with them, that's the bit that they pick up on and go away and do something about. And they might come back in 6 months' time and go, wow, that really worked, or wow, that really didn't. And then you go, well, okay. And you almost start again. But it's very different each time. But it's all intuitive. It's all I can, you know, and I've kind of stopped messaging, unless it's something that I feel really, really, this is dangerous. And I really need to say to you, please be aware or please be careful. I still can't make that decision for you of whether you go down that.
No, you just give the information and you have to leave.
You just give it, you know, as I see, feel, sense, whatever. However it comes.
I love that. Thank you for a really interesting conversation.
Yes, thank you too. That was different.
How do people find you?
My website is lisamm.billingham.com, and my email address is lisa@lisamm.billingham.com. I'm not on Facebook anymore, but all the others I am. I'm on LinkedIn, Pinterest, and Instagram and Twitter, but I don't do as much on social media as I used to do. I was cramming it and I was getting nowhere, and I thought just step back, and then hence the children's book. So that's the next thing.
Good for you. Thank you very much, Lisa, for your time. So this is the lovely Lisa M. Billingham. So if you want to work out how to step forward, what you can and can't do, you should reach out to her, because there's a lovely calmness that's sort of present in Lisa, which I think that for many of us is something that we would probably benefit from immensely. Mm-hmm. My name is Geeta Siddharob. This is Activate Yourself. You know, I always want you at the end of this conversation to get into a place where you feel hope and inspiration, because hope is such a positive emotion, but very dangerous. Hope is that thing that when you feel it, you need to nurture it and really direct it, because otherwise you stop hoping because nothing ever works. So I want you to hope, but along the hope, be inspired and understand that every place that you're coming from, there is a better place that you are going to. And it is inevitable, particularly when you raise your emotional awareness, everything else comes with it. So thank you very much for listening. Please do like, subscribe, and leave me a review, and leave Lisa a lovely review, because that would be fantastic. And I look forward to joining you all again.
Thank you so much for joining us. Our goal was to give you pause, make you think about your life, and inspire you to say, wow, what if I tried to do that? If they can do it, so can I. Did it work? Let us know by finding us on social media at Geeta Siddharob or at Nosh Detox. We upload new shows every 2 weeks here. And if you start to miss us, check us out on YouTube.